Don Guillermo's house was no house, since he had not much money, and was only a fascist to be a snob and to console himself that he must work for little, running a wooden implement shop. He was a fascist, too, from the religiousness of his wife, which he accepted as his own due to his love for her. He lived in an apartment in the building three houses down the square, and when Don Guillermo stood there, looking nearsightedly at the lines, the double lines he knew he must enter, a woman started to scream from the balcony of the apartment where he lived. She could see him from the balcony, and she was his wife. "Guillermo," she cried, "Guillermo, wait and I will be with thee." Don Guillermo turned his head toward where the shouting came from. He could not see her. He tried to say something, but he could not. Then he waved his hand in the direction the woman had called from and started to walk between the lines. "Guillermo," she cried, "Guillermo, oh Guillermo." She was holding her hands on the rail of the balcony and shaking back and forth. "Guillermo!" Don Guillermo waved his hand again toward the noise and walked into the lines with his head up, and you would not have known what he was feeling except for the color of his face. Then some drunkard yelled, "Guillermo!" from the lines, imitating the high, cracked voice of his wife, and Don Guillermo rushed toward the man, blindly, with tears now running down his cheeks, and the man hit him hard across the face with his flail, and Don Guillermo sat down from the force of the blow and sat there crying, but not from fear, while the drunkards beat him, and one drunkard jumped on top of him astride his shoulders and beat him with a bottle. After this, many of the men left the lines, and their places were taken by the drunkards who had been jeering and saying things in bad taste through the windows of the Ayuntamiento. "I myself had felt much emotion at the shooting of the Guardia Civil by Pablo," Pilar said. "It was a thing of great ugliness, but I had thought if this is how it must be, this is how it must be. And at least there was no cruelty, only the depriving of life, which, as we all have learned in these years, is a thing of ugliness, but also a necessity to do if we are to win and to preserve the Republic." When the square had been closed off and the lines formed, I had admired and understood it as a conception of Pablo, although it seemed to me to be somewhat fantastic, and that it would be necessary for all that was to be done in good taste if it were not to be repugnant. Certainly, if the fascists were to be executed by the people, it was better for all the people to have a part in it, and I wished to share the guilt as much as any, just as I hoped to share in the benefits when the town should be ours. But after Don Guillermo I felt a feeling of shame and distaste, and with the coming of the drunkards and the worthless ones into the lines, and the abstention of those who left the lines as a protest after Don Guillermo, I wished that I might disassociate myself altogether from the lines, and I walked away, across the square, and sat down on a bench under one of the big trees that gave shade there. Two peasants from the lines walked over, talking together, and one of them called to me, "What passes with thee, Pilar?" "Nothing, man," I told him. "Yes," he said, "speak. What passes?" "I think that I have a bellyful," I told him. "Us too," he said, and they both sat down on the bench. One of them had a leather wineskin, and he handed it to me. "Rinse out thy mouth," he said, and the other said, going on with the talking they had been engaged in, "The worst is that it will bring bad luck. Nobody can tell me that such things as the killing of Don Guillermo in that fashion will not bring bad luck." Then the other said, "If it is necessary to kill them all, and I am not convinced of that necessity, let them be killed decently and without mockery." "Mockery is justified in the case of Don Faustino," the other said, "since he was always a farcer and was never a serious man. But to mock such a serious man as Don Guillermo is beyond all right." "I have a bellyful," I told him, and it was literally true because I felt an actual sickness in all of me inside, and a sweating, and a nausea, as though I had swallowed bad seafood. "Then nothing," the one peasant said. "We will take no further part in it. But I wonder what happens in the other towns." "They have not repaired the telephone wires yet," I said. "It is a lack that should be remedied." "Clearly," he said. "Who knows but what we might be better employed putting the town into a state of defense than massacring people with this slowness and brutality." "I will go to speak with Pablo," I told them, and I stood up from the bench and started toward the arcade that led to the door of the Ayuntamiento from where the lines spread across the square. The lines now were neither straight nor orderly, and there was much and very grave drunkenness. Two men had fallen down and lay on their backs in the middle of the square and were passing a bottle back and forth between them. One would take a drink and then shout, "Viva la anarquía!" lying on his back and shouting as though he were a madman. He had a red and black handkerchief around his neck. The other shouted, "Viva la libertad!" and kicked his feet in the air and then bellowed, "Viva la libertad!" again. He had a red and black handkerchief, too, and he waved it in one hand and waved the bottle with the other.